Hey, it's Channel 9 Live. We're here at the Build Conference in Redmond, Washington. We're in the beautiful Visitor Center, and we've got it all hooked up. Today we've got Paul Badham and Josh Twist, my friends, hanging out with me today.
Hi, Scott.
We actually just stepped off of the keynote stage.
We did,
and yep. You kept your makeup on, which I appreciated.
Yeah,
you looked lovely.
Too.
I did, yeah. Felt pretty good. Your demo was pretty awesome. We announced this new thing for Azure, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we announced Windows Azure Mobile Services. It's a new service in Windows Azure in preview right now, and it's really about making it very easy for people building software for devices like this thing you've got in front of you here.
Yeah, my lovely
Surface. To connect it to the cloud, take advantage of cloud services, authenticate your users, work with structured data so you can do, you know, interesting scenarios need structured data, and also to send push notifications. Mm-hmm. We make it really, really easy.
So I'm an ASP.NET guy, and you mm-hmm. know this, right? Mm-hmm. So when I think services, I think about web API and JSON services. I assume mm-hmm. that's the kind of services that we're talking about, but when do I use a service like mobile services, which kind of up-levels everything, and when do I write one from scratch?
Do you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think that, and sometimes it's going to depend on what you're comfortable with, what stacks you already know, what you want to do. Really, our goal is to make it so that if you're focusing on the client application, if you're a client guy, you have a great idea about that you want, but you just need to get your data stored in the cloud. You mm-hmm. need to get integrated with various different identity providers. You want to let people log in with not just Microsoft accounts, but Twitter, Google, Facebook, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You want to turn those on as quickly as possible mm-hmm. for the client application that you're building. Then mobile services is a great way to do that. Now, all the things I talked about, you could do that with an ASP.NET app, and you could use some modules that do the OAuth flows that you need to do the authentication and that sort of thing. You could do that too.
Mm-hmm.
The question is what are you comfortable with? How much do you want, like, a turnkey solution? Or if you already know the stuff, you could just go ahead and do it.
Yeah. It's funny. When we started the project about a year ago now, we thought we knew exactly how to identify the difference in audiences. We did a lot of meeting customers. We went to hackathons and coded through the night with mobile developers. And we identified these three personas that we talk about a lot, like the hobbyist dev, this guy who's just building apps in his spare time outside of work. Mm-hmm. And then there was a client-focused dev who really is really good at client development, really loves building UI, works perhaps a startup. And then the third persona was back-end devs. And with mobile services, we really originally focused on those first two personas because they weren't experienced at building back-ends. They didn't have the time to learn Azure, perhaps, or the inclination. And we wanted to make it super easy for those. Now, what we found since we shipped in August is actually a lot of back-end devs are just loving the simplicity of mobile services. The fact they do three clicks, they've got a service that's live, they can make changes, it's live, and just the speed and the lack of impedance, it's just a friction-free development for a service.
So I tend to be suspicious, generally, right?
We've heard that.
You may have heard of things like this, and one of the things that I wonder about, though, is that, is it a toy? You see what I'm saying? Like, you've made it so simple, you don't want to dumb things down, where this is really good for demos and keynotes, but I can't really scale this thing up and run my startup on it.
Right.
So I hear things about removing complexity and making people really productive, but at the same time, could you design this to the point where you could run a startup and the back end would be mobile services?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You can. So we have an option to scale up right now. We already have a number of large customers running on mobile services today, mm-hmm. actually. And so you can scale up to multiple VMs that run that stateless back end. I think, we're going to add a lot of features. One of the great things about being a service in Azure is that we can move very quickly and add new features. And wherever customers say they think there's a gap, we're mm-hmm. loving that feedback because we can change direction in less than 3 months and say, you're right, that's something we should go and do. We should go and add that capability. And we can go and plug that really quickly.
Mm-hmm. And you're not boxed in too much in that the server-side programming model that you get to use when you work with mobile services is a JavaScript-based program model. We use Node.js. And you have a lot of flexibility in what you can do from those scripts. If you need to integrate with other services, we've done some great demos of using something like Twilio. Twilio make it really easy to send SMS messages and that sort of thing. Email, send grids now in the Azure store, it's really easy to do that. Pretty much everybody's got services that expose HTTP endpoints. It's really easy to interact with those HTTP endpoints from the scripts in mobile services. So mm-hmm. you have a lot of extensibility there too.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to hit a wall where there are things that you can't do anymore. You get to write whatever code you want to run in those scripts mm-hmm. on the server.
And what if I outgrow it? I mean, is it possible to do that? Could I make a parallel service that would be kind of like an ASP.NET web API that's totally customer fancy or special that somehow 9 out of 10 of my services use mobile services, but one thing is just so complicated or specific that I have a parallel service.
So composability is a big theme for us. And in fact, there's a session later today, part two of the mobile solutions, where we'll look at extending a mobile service using web API and worker roles. So we made it so it's easy to integrate with the mobile service. We have a HTTP API. You can hit that as a user. You can hit it as kind of an admin, so you can perform all the operations. And one of the key things that's interesting about mobile services is the SQL server that backs it is your SQL server, right? It's just a good old SQL server. You want to run your BI, you want to do any reporting or backups. You can do whatever you want with that thing. It's your database. Mm-hmm. So composition was always a big theme for us. And if you think, when we came up with our original features that we really wanted to focus on in the first version, we had an identity theme, we had a structured data theme, and a messaging in terms of push notifications themes. But there are hundreds of other services and capabilities in Azure that we want to light up. Okay. And so you can think of mobile services as being a thin veneer that at the moment stretches across some of those. Mm-hmm. And where we don't stretch across, then you can use composition. But we're going to continue to stretch that veneer across other services like blob storage and table storage, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those capabilities will keep adding the goodness. Okay. And I think one of the themes we had, we talked about a lot when we started the project, was simplicity but with enablement. So we didn't want to close any gates. You know, you talked about it, well, I hit this boundary and I'm kind of blocked. And so we always focused on, you know, in the scripts that you can run on the server such that you can easily do composition with other services like Paul's just mentioned. And likewise, you can have things hitting that service from outside.
So we've got a number of questions that are coming in from the page, and I would encourage the people that are watching to not only ask questions, which we're going to go through, but also tweet those and put those on Facebook and put out the URL ch9.ms. So let's go through some of these questions here. So one gentleman wants to know what the pricing model is for these things.
So the pricing at the moment is you get 10 mobile services for free as part of the Windows Azure free trial, and that will include your SQL database that you use.
So it does include the database.
In the free trial, you get a database, right? So you get a, I can't remember exactly what it is, but you get some amount of database during that free trial.
I think it's 1 gigabyte.
Right. And then you can, so that's, the 10 services are free during the preview period. Mm-hmm. And you can scale up, and then it's standard VM pricing. So if you scale up to three small VMs, then you pay the same as you would if you just had 3 small VMs in Azure.
Well, except that it's, because it's a preview, it's actually like 33%.
Oh, that's right. There's a discount.
So preview services, they get a discount on the.
So you keep saying VMs, though, and I understand that in Azure, there's a virtual machine that's like an actual VM that I can put Ubuntu on if I wanted to. Then there's websites, which is an abstraction, which is funny because I understand that, right? There's a VM there somewhere, but I don't have to think about it, right? So here we've got mobile services that are, again, somewhere underneath there's a VM. When I scale it up, what am I adding? I'm adding an instance of a...
Yeah, what you're actually doing is, at the moment, by default, when you start using mobile services, your mobile service is created in a shared environment. Other people are running alongside you on that same VM. When you go to the scale tab, then you basically hit a button that says, I want to be in reserved. I want to have my own VM for my mobile services. Once you do that, it asks you, well, what do you want? And it's basically, I'll have a small VM. How many of these do I want? And so at that point, when you're saying, yes, I want this reserved small VM, that you're paying for compute, essentially. It's like having a small worker role or a small web role or like.
So there's not a premium for mobile services.
Nope.
You're effectively paying for whatever.
Well, it's a discount because it's a preview.
Oh, okay. So it's 33% off of what you would pay for a small VM.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, you need this when you get to the point where you have a lot of traffic and you actually need a whole machine yourself. Yeah. This is not something that you would turn on.
Yeah. And you want to know that you're running in your own environment away from everybody else.
Yeah.
So it's worth mentioning, actually, we are built on exactly the same infrastructure that runs websites. The website team is the dependency of us. So really, a mobile services, when you're in shared mode, is running on that same infrastructure.
Okay, so it's funny because, again, as a website guy, that makes me feel more comfortable because I understand that.
Yeah, so that's how it works, basically.
So you're building on top of a website, and you're a container, a component container. And then I can go in and say, these are the scripts that I want. And you're doing that work for me. But you're hiding a layer of complexity that I don't have to think about anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what phones can I use, though? What phones can I use? What mobile things could I potentially target with this?
So we announced this week here at Build that we have Windows Phone 8 support. We also already had Windows 8. And for the other one that we announced just a few weeks ago was iOS. So we have a great experience on iOS. We have the same sort of quick start experience that hopefully lots of people have already seen with mobile services, and that you can go there and say, look, how can I get to the point where I have an app running on my iPad or my iPhone that's talking to mobile services, and you can get it done in a couple of minutes.
So iOS, so iPhone, iPad, all the this and that. You also said Windows 8.
Windows 8 desktop.
Windows 8 desktop. So even though it's a mobile services, it isn't. I mean, it's mobile just because I can take it with me.
Well, that one looks pretty mobile.
Well, it is pretty mobile, but it's desktop apps too, though.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I think I'd say those are the platforms that we provide a native SDK for out of the box. So you get the fancy quick.
But what if I've got a Symbian crowd or a bunch of Android people I want to support? How do I work with those?
Yeah, so we have a documented HTTP API that just describes exactly what operations are happening when you use our client SDKs. It's a pretty straightforward API. As I said, it's documented. People can go out there. We've already seen people using us from Android phones because it was reasonably straightforward.
And we had the work from the Xamarin guys who did, Xamarin, who do MonoTouch and MonoDroid, have already built an SDK.
Yeah, they basically forked our SDK and made the changes necessary to make it so that you could use mobile services from a MonoDroid or MonoTouch app.
So you said forked, which means that it's open source. Then.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is available, like any other thing on Azure, because I know that all the Azure SDK stuff, like I know that when I want to do an Azure command line thing, I can say npm node package manager install Azure, and I've got command line tools on Linux, on Mac, on Windows. So the SDK's out there, I can look at the code.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's on GitHub.
Wow, that's pretty slick.
Yep.
It's part of everything that's, Windows, Azure, there's lots of SDKs that are on GitHub.
Okay.
Right,
so. Now, this seems like a really good idea, but it's not the first time anyone's ever done this. There's Parse, there's Buddy, there's Heroku, there's different people. Parse probably is the first one that kind of comes to mind. Are those cloud-based mobile services as well, and are those kind of in the similar space that we're trying to accomplish?
So Parse is interesting, actually. They're a great service, back-end as a service. I think we're a little different in terms of we're really just providing a veneer over the existing components that Azure provides. So, you get access to that database that's backing you, and we bill at the same rate of Azure. So whilst I think we're similar, I do think we're a little bit different. Parse are great, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said Twitter, you said Facebook, I can authenticate to all these things. Could I authenticate to Active Directory?
Not yet, but we're working on that. So we're going to really open up the identity system. At the moment, we support Facebook, Twitter, Google, and Microsoft account. And if you've seen the keynote, you'll have seen just how easy it is to add that capability to your to your apps. We're going to work on really integrating that with the Azure Active Directory piece. So you'll be able to pull in ADFS and do all kinds of custom stuff.
Mm-hmm. And all these services speak JSON, right? They speak JavaScript, object notation. Over the wire, over HTTP, can they be over SSL?
Yes.
Yes, by default. Yes,
by default.
It's by default.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's SSL by default. That's cool. Now the backend store, I talk to SQL Azure by default. Could I talk to something else? Could I talk to blob storage?
Yeah. So what the model for that at the moment is that you do it from your scripts. So if, for example, maybe you're making an app where you want to let people upload images to blob storage, what you would probably do is you write a script that when somebody says, I want to save this image, it does a call to blob storage using your access key, and your access key is like secure on the server at that point, and asks for a shared access signature back. That shared access signature would then be sent to the client in the JSON response, and then the client can take that shared access signature and use that to put the blob in the storage. And you would use a very similar pattern to make it so that you could authenticate read access for blobs as well.
Yep.
That's the model. Generally, you use the script and whatever. And in this particular case, it's super easy because we let you use the Azure Node SDK. And it's got some APIs that make it very straightforward to grab a shared access signature and do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to extend that veneer across those services.
Yeah, you can imagine something even more integrated, right?
Yeah.
Where you just by default mobile services has this feature in it where you can just store blobs and do the authentication rather than having to wire it up yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So you're getting all this feedback. You're taking notes, I assume.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I do, again, want to encourage the people that are viewing to go up, and I know you're here on the page, but also tweet Facebook ch9.ms so that more people can come in and join the conversation. They're actually putting their questions in. I've got their questions here and up on the big screen. Really good point here, which is a question after my own heart by Alex, who's saying, are there any plans to have HTML5, JavaScript? I mean, I'm assuming if it's JSON,
right,
the answer is going to be yes,
yep,
of course.
Yep, so we're working on that right now. We'll be looking at adding that support pretty soon. It's a hot feature. We think it'd be a great capability to add, so watch this space.
So that's interesting, given the things that we're doing on the ASP.NET side, where now you can say file new Facebook application out of the box. That's something that we announced at the keynote. Yeah. Facebook SDK integrated into the default templates, and also Facebook social identity provider integration. And then also kind of the ongoing proliferation on the web of single page applications, where there's just a lot going on. That's effectively the same kind of app, right? It's running in a little virtual machine, just happens to be JavaScript.
We've had a lot of interest in this scenario. Lots of people are saying, well, I just want to be able to have my app grab some HTML, grab some JavaScript, and then interact with mobile services.
Yeah, when we were working on the project internally, we had an internal preview that Microsoft employees could sign up for to build their apps with. And we needed some system to dish out IDs for people to sign up. And so we had to provision an internal website, et cetera, et cetera. And we thought, well, wait a minute. Why don't we just modify our in-development version of mobile services? Mm-hmm. And we threw a HTML page onto a SharePoint site, had that talking to our modified version of mobile services. And within, what, 2 hours?
Yeah.
We had this working registration system.
And it
scaled
sends
it
emails.
Up using HTML, JavaScript. And it was sending emails from the scripts. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And we're like, this could really work. This could really work.
One of the things that's been really exciting to me about moving in Azure, and I've talked publicly before about how, you know, when we first moved over, we had this portal that didn't quite do what we wanted to do. And, you know, and I wasn't really thrilled maybe 18 months ago moving over to Azure. You know what I mean? Scott Gu took over and he's kind of, you know, beaten us all with a wet noodle and we've all gotten into, you know, gotten in shape. And that's what I tell my kids. If you don't, I'm going to beat you with a wet noodle. And now we've got this platform that is updating itself. It's actually happening while we're sleeping. And it's a couple of times I've been in the portal. I don't know if you've had this experience. And I'm in the portal working and it says, you need to hit refresh because we just launched a new version of the portal.
That's very cool.
Are you expecting to rev mobile services every month?
We rev every
all
week.
The time?
We actually, I mean, we don't always rev the portal every week.
Nope.
But the mobile services is being deployed every week.
Well,
we are
very
constantly
fast
making changes, fixing bugs, you know,
so
that sort of thing.
That's one of the great things about us. As a service is that we are updating those runtimes, adding new features. It's just lighting up automatically. Mm-hmm. If we want to improve performance, we can do that as we're working. We're changing those runtimes and deploying it and managing all that for you.
How are you going to maintain my uptime? If I'm a little startup and I'm deciding to start running things and I get tech crunched, but you're updating the platform underneath me, how do I manage that?
Yeah, no, it's actually, you could ask the exact same question about Azure websites, for example. And yeah, Josh mentioned...
Which is the answer.
That's the answer. We rely on the great Azure Websites team. They've already had to figure out tough problems like this. How do you keep your sites running
on Azure? So that's not something you have to worry about, really,
well, because
you're on top of...
Because as Josh said, we're running on them. Yeah,
we are standing on the shoulder of giants, though, really, with
it's
websites.
It's fantastic.
Right?
Yeah. Other teams at Microsoft do a lot of the really tough stuff.
Yep.
Very clever.
We get to glue it together and make it easy.
One of the things we do is we host user code, right? So you can write code that runs on the server. And our first challenge, and it just happened, it was just wonderful that at the same time we were trying to solve this problem, the websites team had kind of solved it and said, so we have this way of, because we wanted to be able to give mobile services away for free. And to do that, we can't give away whole VMs. They're kind of expensive, right, for in terms of giving them away for free. And so we just use the websites. They give us that isolation so that user code, your code can't do anything bad to my code, and my code can't do anything bad to your code. And we just get that. That just comes for free with websites.
The sandboxing is
exactly.
Free.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Very cool. So let me ask you this, though, and I apologize if I'm asking questions that are like, no one gave me any questions to ask.
No, that's
so
fine.
I figure until Scott Gu comes in and tells me to stop, I'm just going to ask all the hard questions.
Uh-oh.
So in the keynote, you know, we work very hard for many, many hours to make 10 minutes look awesome.
Right.
And in this experience, you're in the portal, and you're, you know, you're pasting some code in, but you're editing code in the portal, and then you hit save, and then you say, and now it's live.
Yep.
And someone could say, well, that's very uncomfortable. He's just made a production change, and now it's in test-driven development out the window. Microsoft has jumped the shark. What are you guys doing? It's insanity. It's just chaos over there. Josh Twist, who I trusted, is now editing code in production. How do I balance the convenience of being able to do that for prototyping and staging with the realities of running a production
website? So, I mean, part of this is, I mean, you didn't say source control, but part of this is...
It's implied.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right.
And this is, I'll admit, this is a big gap that we have at the moment. An experience where all you're doing is just editing some code that's in a text box in a web page or something like that. That is something that you are going to need to do a better job of.
It's a good demo. But at the same time, the thing that I think is interesting is we've got TFS, we've got Git, we've got all these things that Azure knows about. And this has kind of got me thinking, even though I don't work on your team, I'm thinking, okay, well, they built on top of websites.
Right.
Yes.
And we've got Git deployment.
Yep.
We can deploy from TFS. They must be thinking about this.
So, yeah, I mean, we're working on that pretty hard. So I expect to see something out of space soon. What I will see is that we have, at the moment, the model isn't, you don't just work in production, right? So we tend to see people have two mobile services. So you have a dev where you do all your practice, and you have like a dev environment, and then you have your production. And so you move your scripts across. You don't just test everything out on your live site and say, I wonder what happens if I change this. No, right, I mean, right. I'm not advocating that for a second. You do it in your dev, you get it all working, right. You
I feel better.
Tick it off, and then you move it.
Of course,
we'd like to improve that.
You're right. Going to do that manually at the moment, right. And that's why I spoke to the source control point. You really want to make it so instead you can pull from your dev, merge dev into master.
See, that's what I like to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then I'm going to take a sip from my generic non-specific soda because we're not going to give these people any more money than they already have. Tasty.
Is it good?
It's lovely. Generic.
I'd like to try it. Yeah, I have generic non-specific water.
It's not, they've actually taken the labels off of that too because this came out of the tap. big thanks again to the folks who are up on ch9.ms. Make sure that you tweet that and spread the word because people can ask questions. Good question here about the money clock. Let's say that you've got no users. They're sitting around. How does the money clock work here if I have no one's up at for 8 hours or something like that for my thing? Do I just turn it down to a tiny VM and then wait until they wake up and turn it back up?
Yeah, so I think it's a little unusual for you to have an app where you either have tens of thousands of users or you have zero users. I think realistically you'd be running in a shared mode until you got to the point where your app started going viral, going big.
But doesn't it bring up the larger issue of paranoia about billing? This is the thing I think is so funny because when I first heard about Azure, I'm thinking, okay, it's elastic growth, right? And then it's like, well, that's elastic billing.
Right.
You know, no one wants to wake up with a $1,000 bill.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, at the moment, like, there isn't anything elastic about what you do when you scale mobile services, in that you're either in some shared mode or in your reserved mode, and you picked exactly how many VMs you're running.
Yeah, exactly.
It's elastic when you're there.
It feels elastic.
Slider.
Hey, look, I'm with the slider.
I saw Scott threatening to cause you 380 instances worth of VMs in his
which
in
is
his
pretty
session.
Awesome. I mean, that feels pretty elastic. But I think the point is that people are afraid that this is going to cost big money. How much control do you have, and when do you know that it's time to move to a bigger website and move to multiple instances?
So the dashboard gives you clues, though. It shows you your CPU usage, you know, the traffic that's coming in, et cetera. So that'll give you clues that it's time to go to another VM when you'll see those numbers raise. I think at the moment, you know, we're adding support very soon as well to be able to script using like the client SDKs as you have in for Node and for Azure generally, so that you'd be able to automate moving up and down the number of instances you have, which can help you. You know, if you know you have a peak at 9 o'clock and you really want to save that money,
just have a script,
right? Then you have a script turns it, and you could do that.
Yeah, because really, pretty much everything that you see in the portal, there's an HTTP API there that's accessible in public. You do this process where you get a management certificate, and then you can go ahead and call those APIs directly. So if there's a slider there that says that you can change something in the portal, you can do it programmatically too. That's just the general rule with Azure.
Okay, cool. I've actually moved a couple of things to Azure slowly myself. I feel, now that I trust it, I'm starting to move things there, and then I'm looking at the bill. I've moved two different podcast sites, and then .NET Rocks, Carl Franklin's .NET Rocks, Hanselman's, it's all over there now.
Cool.
Smallest.net's over there now. And bills have been, these are small traffic sites. I'm getting 10,000, 20,000 page views a month, and I'm paying $2, $3.
That's pretty good.
The other nice thing is with the MSDN, if you've got an MSDN subscription, you get, what, 750 hours of compute? About half a month?
And you get some database, too. It covers your database as well.
So the free stuff that you're talking about is free for anybody. I can go and sign up at Azure.com, and I can go and I'll get 10 websites, 10 mobile services, and those mobile services include a gigabyte of database.
So you get a gigabyte of database that you can use with your websites or your mobile services.
So I share that.
You can absolutely do that.
Yeah, you share that single database across multiple.
Which is great for development, right? Because you don't want to have to pay for a database. So you can just have one database for your development, and when you're kicking the tires and learning, you can share that across multiple mobile services.
Okay, so the mobile services can put stuff into this database, and I can go and call that myself in
So the schema just is canonical. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly what you'd expect in that.
Now, Scott Guthrie talked about mobile video. In my demo, I uploaded a video, and I just put the video unencoded, just dropped it right into blob storage. Mm-hmm. He put it into Windows Azure Mobile
Media Services.
And then it kind of fans out, and it says, here's the iPhone version, here's the Windows Phone 8, and it kind of encodes them all.
Sure.
Can I then stream those? Am I streaming them from your service, or how does that work? One of the questions here is it the streaming video to a mobile device, how does that relate to your mobile services?
I think you could use mobile services to handle the process of, like if you wanted to store extra metadata or information about, who uploaded these videos or that sort of thing, it might make sense to use mobile services for that. But you wouldn't want to send a whole bunch of your actual video data and that directly through mobile services. It would make more sense to interact directly with a service, either blob storage or something like media services that's designed for that scenario.
We can give an example, actually, of again, we'll stretch that veneer to make it even easier, but right now that's not too hard to do. So what you can do is you can have a server script, right? Because you want, here's the thing, you want to protect your assets, you want to protect your blob storage and not just open this thing up so any client can start throwing blobs in there and serving
exactly.
them. So blobs have a really neat solution for this because they don't want, nobody wants to recommend that you upload large content through a server that's just going to go to another server. You just want to go direct to the blob storage,
exactly.
right? So the solution to that is shared access signatures. So your mobile service using the Azure SDK can generate these SAS, these shared access signatures that it sends down to the client that gives that client a right to say upload that profile picture for 1 hour. And that's a really great way of building out those kind of blob plus mobile services scenarios. And I believe Media Services also has a HTTP API, so you could do similar things there from server scripts.
A lot of people who are starting to think about the cloud, this is their first opportunity to scale out.
Right.
Not just scale up, but scale out. So I'm getting questions from ASP.NET developers about session management and how this works. And there's just the assumption that you're going to write this in such a way that I can say three instances.
Right.
Where is state being managed? Or is this itself a great way to manage state? Is this a little kind of database back session that I could potentially use?
Yeah. So I mean, typically, I mean, what happens for mobile apps is usually there's a little bit more state in the client in terms of it knows where you are, where you're this three steps through this five step process or something like that. Where previously, because if you were doing like a web app, the web is typically stateless, so that means that state had to be on the server somewhere. So you will have more state that sits on the client. Our server-side programming model is stateless. It's designed to make it so that you can scale out. So we don't really give you anywhere where you can sort of store a bit of state because we can't guarantee that the next time that mobile app tries to talk to your servers, it will actually hit the same instance. We can't. We won't make that guarantee. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that you're going to have more state on the client, and you're going to potentially have some state in the database, and you have other options too. You could look at using the cache service. The Azure Cache service, you'd be able to integrate with that. From
so
scripts.
You could access that from within your stuff?
From your scripts.
Yeah.
So how does that work? These scripts, you said that it's built on Node.js.
Yep.
I'm writing JavaScript to do this. So if I'm a JavaScript front-end developer, I'm comfortable with that already.
Mm-hmm.
These little scripts, then how would I access a, you know, a memory service?
Something like cache service.
Like
so
cache service. Yeah.
Using the Azure SDK, you can just do a require, which pulls in the appropriate module. And then you can just program against that the same way you would in Node.js.
So I'm using the Node SDK.
Yeah.
In mobile
Absolutely.
Services?
You can just
yep.
require Azure, and yep. then you have the Azure Node SDK.
And we have a bunch of modules in Node that are available, like the my favorite HTTP Node module is Request. Mm-hmm. It makes it so easy to make HTTP requests. And we use that in the keynote. That was how we called
right.
the Twitter API. So, you know, it's just a few lines of code, very elegant, very easy. And one of the reasons we chose JavaScript, actually, is when you're picking your first language to do on the server, and also it's first, we haven't ruled out adding C# support.
That was my next question. Mm-hmm.
Right, okay, great. So, you know, if people make noise about that, then we will direct laser beam at
I'm
it.
I'm thinking I'd like web APIs. You
right.
know?
A common thing. So that's certainly very close on our radar, very nearby. So the more noise that's made about that, the better. But it's, we made it, so we picked JavaScript because obviously we support multiple platforms. You know, we're going to add Android support very soon. JavaScript's a very universal language. Pretty much everybody's written some of that stuff, right? So it makes it a really great choice for our first server language.
Okay. See, and that's just funny because Andy M. just brings up the question here, and he asks exactly what I wanted to say, which is, when do I get .NET on the server instead of Node.js? Sounds like make noise is what
make
I heard.
Noise.
What I heard.
I can't say exactly when, but, you know, it's certainly
if you
on
want
our radar.
It, you can tweet Josh Twist.
At Josh Twist, yeah.
At Josh Twist, fantastic. Okay. Rajesh has a question here about any plans around API virtualization a la Apigee.
So, I mean, there's a lot of potential for us to do stuff like this. I wouldn't say if we think about the radar of things that are making noise for us at the moment, it's much further out.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want that and they want to tell us what the features they want, get in touch.
So any kind of features that they want, they could tweet either.
Absolutely.
Of them,
I mean, the tweets. Mail,
tweet, email,
we have a forum,
we have our Windows,
user voice, anywhere.
Windows Azure Mobile Services Forum is a great place to do some of this stuff, right? Make some posts, make some noise, and we will direct our laser beam where we think the best scenarios are and the most noise is being made.
One of the other things that you showed was the push notifications.
Yeah.
And that's not something specific to mobile services, is that right? That's Windows Azure Notification Services?
We're using, it's the Windows Notification Services and the Windows Phone Notification Services. So there's two slightly different services depending on whether or not you're delivering to your Surface, a certain notification to your Surface or to your Windows 8 phone. So what we do is we give you a very similar API. In the scripts, you can basically say, I want to push to Win8 or push to Windows Phone. And there's the templates for whether or not you want to send a tile or a text.
But do I need to know that that person has that device? I mean, ultimately, I just want to say, hey, Josh, give me an update. And I don't care where it is. I want it everywhere.
So one of the things in the keynote was I showed a table called Channel, and it was one of the, I guess they'll say one of the shortcuts we took in the demo, where we already had a bit of code that was doing some channel management for us. Now that basically means that when the app starts up, we need to make a record of that channel and store it in the database.
Okay.
So that later, when I'm on the server and something happens, I can say, oh, I'm going to hit that channel, which basically identifies the device, right, so the surface with that app running. I can say, well, I want to send a notification to Scott. And at the moment, we do that in mobile services. It's pretty easy. We've got a database there. It's super simple to work with the code you've seen this morning. We are going to go to the next level on that as well. That's a thing that's very close on our radar is device management. So we kind of started talking about push notifications. Each of the platforms has a mechanism. So Windows Phone 8, iOS, Android, et cetera, BlackBerry, all have their own notification server.
Right, and now, there's whole startups that do nothing but
absolutely make that easy,
and they hide all of that.
Yeah. Right, and because there's a bunch of stuff to do. So when you want to send a notification to Windows 8, for example, you have to authenticate, get your bearer token in a sort of OAuth flow, and then you have to build up your template, which is an XML template. So these things are very powerful, but we realized in our scripts that working with XML in JavaScript, it's not as easy as working with JSON. Mm-hmm. JSON is JavaScript. And so we said, let's create a very simple API here that makes it just a doddle, a real easy thing to talk to that service. Feels native, you feel at home right now in the server scripts. And that's what we saw today in the keynote.
I assume that I could also, because I'm just using JavaScript and I'm just a node, if I wanted to use a third party to manage my notifications, I could do that.
Yes.
Jeff has just asked a question about iOS push notifications. Do we support that or would I use that
elsewhere? I'll let you take it.
Yeah, so we're working on that right now. That will be with you soon, is all I can say. So we're adding Apple push. It'll be just as easy. Imagine you saw code that said push.wns for Windows Notification Services.send. Mm-hmm. We will have push.apns.send, and that's going to light up pretty soon.
So I think we're all, hopefully, and I can see from the questions that are coming in, starting to think about all the different stuff we could build with this.
Sure.
And I think the next obvious question, also from Jeff, who asked the question about Apple, is like in-app purchasing and commerce and finance. I mean, I'm going to start thinking, well, gosh, if you're going to handle all this for me, take their credit cards and start charging. I could go and use Stripe or PayPal or whatever. Yep. I can call out to any API now, which makes me feel really comfortable.
Right.
Is there a place where you're keeping your backlog of things where we can all vote on them like that?
There is internally. I mean, I guess maybe we should set up a user voice. I think we're sort of getting a hint here that we need a user voice.
So let's set up a user voice.
So we're going to do that as a result of this request. So thanks, Jeff. Let's go.
Here's an interesting question from Simon that's a larger question. He's saying, how can his $2 app use Azure for years to come and still be viable financially? This is kind of more of an opinion question.
Oh,
I
wow.
think.
Yeah.
Because
a
lot of people come out with these 99 cent apps, they put their back end on it, and then, 10 years from now, you spent that 99 cents.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I give you my opinion?
Well, I mean,
with just
my opinion.
This is which is, I mean, I think, from my perspective, we're seeing more and more apps. I'm used to seeing more and more apps in the various different stores, which an extremely cheap small purchase, and then in-app purchases.
Yep.
Turning on features. I think I used paper on the iPad, which was a good example. They give you like one or two different markers, and then to get the rest of the features, they're in-app purchases.
Right.
I think that is the way, from my perspective, to do this economically. To continue, you can work on your app for years and years and continue to add more features and make those in-app purchases. That's just my take on it.
So that seems a big monetization approach people are going for now is the in-app purchase. I mean, I will say anecdotally, a lot of people I know that ship apps, it seems to work out for them that once they get enough purchases coming in, it doesn't just stop, right? If they had a successful app, it doesn't just stop and they have to take that down. And we know a couple of people who run services, who build apps, like Eric, for example, with Roe.
Yeah, Roe, the Twitter app.
And, I mean, he charges like a very small amount of money for that, but he runs a bunch of machines.
I know that people are afraid that Azure is going to like cost them a lot of money because they're going to, I mean, everyone thinks they're going to get tech crunched tomorrow.
Right.
Or they're going to show up on Slashdot or Hacker News. But honestly, this is not huge money. I mean, I think that the guys that are running like Jabber, like David Fowler, JABBR.net. I think he's paying like $20 a month or something ridiculous.
Right.
I've paid $3 so far.
It's hobby money, right?
I mean, even like the Murali guys that were mentioned in the keynote are only spending a couple hundred bucks a month. So I think it's about big scale. You need to be pushing a lot more than a couple of million page views before it's going to start costing you. I noticed that even Hansel Minutes and .NET Rocks and all those different podcasts, our CPU is still only running at 3 or 4%.
Really?
Right. It's not working that hard.
Right.
Here's a good question we can maybe get ready to end on here from Joshua Pierce. He wants to know, when is this going to be done being a preview? Now, I know Gmail was a beta for like 15 years. But are you going to use preview as an excuse to just say it's not ready yet? Or are you going to bake this one day and say it's done?
So we already have customers running apps on mobile services today. If you are interested in going to production of mobile services, I'd say get in touch and we can talk about what it might look like to have a preview SLA with that individual customer. So again, hit me on Josh Twist at Twitter or email or the forums and we'll hook up. They want support, right? Yeah. We've agreed, you know, support in these cases. I think when we'll come out of preview, I can't give an exact date on that. We're still trying to work that out when we actually lose that preview moniker. But I hope that wouldn't dissuade people too much from trying out mobile services and maybe talking to us about going to production with that.
Mm-hmm. And is this going to be included in the calculator? I mean, what's a good way? We've only got just
it's
a
in the calculator, right?
Yeah,
I think it's in the Windows Azure calculator.
There's so a tab for mobile services.
And the bandwidth that these are using, is there a way, am I paying for that as well?
Yes, but just the same. We don't do anything different billing-wise than Azure websites do.
Okay.
So, you know, you pay for bandwidth, though, you pay for bandwidth in mobile services.
What is 165 megabytes a day or something like that?
Yeah, you get quite a bit for free.
What you get from Azure websites, and the same applies for mobile services.
Yep.
Okay. Very cool. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Paul Badham and Josh Twist. You can follow both these guys on Twitter. And I want to encourage people, as we get ready to leave here, to keep spreading the word about ch9.ms. They can go up there. You can anonymously or not anonymously ask questions. We're having a lot of fun here up at Redmond in the Visitor Center in Building 92. And we'll be back after this break.